Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Back on my proper microphone. Feels good. We are... Oh, hang on. One moment, please. Please hold. I just realised I've got the wrong thing open. We're talking about Part 8, Chapter 14. That's what we're doing. My discussion prompt was a GIF of Job from Arrested Development saying, "Bees?" And that's it. Something, something, bees. Tolstoy loves a good opportunity to drop a bit of bee knowledge on his readers. And with only 5 chapters to go, he's started to panic and go, "Oh, hang on. Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Have I shown off my religion knowledge? Better do some of that real quick. Ooh, hang on. Have I shown off my bee knowledge? Better drop some bee knowledge into this book." And started talking about bees. Corlett said, "I liked this chapter better than the other recent ones. It's very leaven to decide that whatever good thing has happened to him recently will mean that he has goodwill towards everyone and never quarrel again. It seems religion didn't completely solve his troubles any more than marrying Kitty did." I also winced when Levin asked his brother about the book. Ouch. Altreat said, "Feeling some schadenfreude at Levin's discontent with the reality after he was just crying happy transcendent tears about how his faith had delivered him. Also saw a parallel here with Anna, who had also told herself that she'd behave, be contrite and apologetic at once and..." Wait, whoops, sorry, I read that wrong. "Be contrite and apologetic and nice, only to then blow up at Vronsky. Levin's also telling himself he won't quarrel or become upset with others, only to do so seconds later." I Am Norwegian has submitted a GIF of, I think that's Nicolas Cage, in a cage full of bees. "I liked Levin's newfound faith being confronted with reality and Levin having to realize that he hadn't actually solved everything. That's always the way things are with revelations. You think you've discovered the key, and then you find that each situation still requires its own solution, and that any real change will still require work and time." Yeah, we get carried away, don't we, with epiphanies. Sometimes you have a real epiphany moment, and everything's going to change, and everything is, oh my God, my whole life makes sense all of a sudden, and also I'm kind of a bit hungry, and what was that epiphany about again? Probably something important. Who cares? And then you just go back to being normal. Swims to the Mama Fishy said, "So, this movie made a very big impression on younger me. Killer Bees in America, made for television horror film, starring Gloria Swanson. Thank you for staying on the discussion prompt," Swims at the Mama Fishy. "My discussion prompt was bees, people. Not Levin having his faith tested immediately after discovering his faith." No, I'm kidding. You can talk about anything and everything. "Killer Bees is an American made for television horror film starring Gloria Swanson, directed by Curtis Harrington." Ooh, love a good Curtis Harrington flick. "It had a very small cast..." I've never heard of Curtis Harrington. "A small cast including Kate Jackson, Craig Stevens, John Getz and Edward Albert. Madame Van Bohlen, a strong-willed woman and matriarch of her family, not only runs her family wine business, but she also has a mysterious power. She can... has psychic control over a swarm of killer bees that resides in her vineyard." You can watch the whole film on YouTube. Oh, so you can. 1974 ABC Movie of the Week. Why does it look... It looks so bad. It looks far worse than 1970s. Simply Productive says, "I will take the bees for the next few chapters over Levin being hormonal." Hormonal is a good way to put it. I like that very much. All right, I want to keep reading. Chapter 15. Once, or what are we need? 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Five more chapters, including today. And we're finished. Part 8. Finished the novel. Part 8 has 19 chapters, by the way. So, here's chapter 15. Kostya, do you know with whom Sergius Ivanich travelled coming here? Said Dolly, after she had distributed cucumbers and honey among the children. With Vronsky. He is on his way to Serbia. Yes, and not alone, but is taking a squadron at his own expense, said Katavasov. That is like him, said Levin. But are volunteers really still going? He added with a glance at Koznishev. Koznishev did not reply, but with the blunt side of a knife, carefully extracted from a bowl in which lay a wedge of white honeycomb, a live bee that had stuck in the running honey. Yes, I should think so. You should have seen what went on in that station yesterday, said Katavasov, audibly biting into a cucumber. Well, how is one to understand it? In heaven's name, Sergius Ivanich, explain to me where all these volunteers are going and whom they are fighting, said the old prince, evidently continuing a conversation that had been started during Levin's absence. The Turks, answered Koznishev, quietly smiling. Having extracted the bee, which, black with honey, moved its legs helplessly as he shifted it from the knife to a firm aspen leaf. But who has declared war on Turkey? Ivan Ivanich Rogozov and the Countess Lydia Ivanovna, assisted by Madame Stahl? No one has declared war, but people sympathize with their suffering neighbors and wish to help them, replied Koznishev. But the prince is not talking of help, interposed Levin, taking his father-in-law's side, but of war. He says that private people cannot take part in war without the consent of the government. Kostya, look, here's a bee. Really, we shall get stung, cried Dolly, waving away a wasp. But that's not a bee, it's a wasp, said Levin. Well, and what is your theory? Asked Katavasov with a smile, evidently challenging Levin to a discussion. Why have private individuals no right? My theory is this. On the one hand, war is such a bestial, cruel and terrible affair that no single man, not to speak of a Christian, can take on himself personally the responsibility for beginning a war. It can only be done by a government which is summoned to it and is brought to it inevitably. On the other hand, by law and by common sense, in the affairs of state and especially in the matter of war, citizens renounce their personal will. Koznishev and Katavasov, ready with their rejoinders, began speaking both together. That's just the point, my dear fellow, that cases may arise when the government does not fulfill the will of its citizens and the society announces its own will, said Katavasov. But Koznishev evidently did not approve of this reply. He frowned at Katavasov's words and said something different. It is a pity you put the question that way. There is no declaration of war in this case, but simply an expression of human Christian feeling. Our brothers by blood and religion are being killed. Well, say they were not even our brothers or co-religionists, but simply children, women, and old people. One's feelings are outraged, and Russians hasten to help to stop those horrors. Imagine that you were going along a street and saw a tipsy man beating a woman or a child. I think you would not stop to ask whether war had or had not been declared against that man, but you would rush at him and defend the victim. But I would not kill the man, replied Levin. Yes, you would. I don't know. If I saw such a thing, I might yield to my instinctive feeling. I can't say beforehand. But there is no such instinctive feeling about the oppression of the Slavs. Nor can there be. Perhaps you have none, but others have, said Koznishev with a dissatisfied frown. Among the people there live traditions of Orthodox Christians suffering under the yoke of the infidel Musulman. The people have heard of their brother's sufferings and have spoken out. Perhaps, said Levin evasively, but I don't see it. I myself am one of the people, and I don't feel it. Nor do I, said the prince. I was living abroad and read the papers, and must own that I could not at all understand why, even before the Bulgarian atrocities, all Russians suddenly grew so fond of their Slavonic brothers, while I don't feel any love for them. I was much grieved and thought I was a monster, or that the Carlsbad waters had that effect on me. But on getting back I was relieved, for I see that there are others besides me who are only interested in Russia and not in their brother Slavs. Constantine is one. Personal opinions don't count in this matter, said Koznishev. It is not an affair of personal opinions when all Russia, the people, has expressed its will. But forgive me, I don't see it. The people know nothing about it, said the prince. Oh, Papa, don't they? And on Sunday in church, remarked Dolly, who had been following the conversation. Please bring a towel, said she to the old man, who was looking smilingly at the children. It's impossible that all. But what was there in church on Sunday? The priest was ordered to read it. He did so. The people understood nothing, but they sighed as they always do during a sermon, continued the prince. They were told that there would be a collection in the church for a soul-saving object, so they each took out a kopeck and gave it, but what it was for they did not know. The people can't help knowing. A consciousness of their destiny always exists in the people, and at moments like the present it becomes clear to them, said Koznishev, positively glancing at the old beekeeper. The handsome old man with a black beard turning grey in places and thick silvery hair stood motionless with a bowl of honey in his hand, gazing kindly and calmly down from his height at the gentlefolk, clearly neither understanding them nor wishing to understand. That's just so, he said to Koznishev and moved his head significantly. Yes, you'd better ask him. He neither knows nor thinks about it, said Levin. Have you heard about the war, Mikhailich? He asked, addressing the old man. What they read in the church? What do you think? Ought we to fight for the Christians? Why should we think, Alexander Nikolaevich, the emperor who has thought for us and will think for us all on all matters? He can see better. Shall I bring some more bread and give the laddie a bit? He asked Dolly, pointing to Grisha, who was finishing his crust. I have no need to ask, said Koznishev. We have seen and still see hundreds and hundreds of men who give up everything to serve the righteous cause and who come from all ends of Russia and openly and clearly express their thoughts and aims. They bring their mites or go themselves and say straight out why they do it. What does that mean? It means, it seems to me, said Levin, beginning to get excited, that in a nation of 80 millions there can always be found not hundreds, as is now the case, but tens of thousands of men who have lost their social position, happy-go-lucky people who are always ready to go into Pugachev's robber band, or to Kiva or Serbia. Footnote says, Pugachev was the leader of a very serious rebellion in the region of Catherine the Great. In the reign of Catherine the Great. I tell you, it's not hundreds and not the happy-go-lucky people, but the best representatives of the people, said Koznishev, as irritably as if he were defending the last of his possessions. And the donations? There, at any rate, the whole people directly express its will. That word people is so indefinite, said Levin. Clerks in district offices, schoolmasters, and one of a thousand peasants may know what it is all about. The rest of the 80 millions, like Mikhailich, not only don't express their will, but have not the least idea what it is they have to express it about. What right have we, then, to say it is the will of the people? Alrighty, there we go, another chapter down. Have your say about that over at the subreddit. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow.